Hi, and welcome to the FIFA Pro Podcast, Changing the Game. I'm Allie Riley. In this series, we'll be speaking to international female footballers about their personal journeys to success and find out what it's taken for them to reach the top of their game. And in celebration of the 30th anniversary of the FIFA Women's World Cup, we'll also be looking at how women's football has evolved over the last three decades and discuss what more needs to be done to protect the well-being of players and ensure that future generations can reach their full potential. Today, I'm talking with Tiffany Roberts-Sahadek.
My focus was just like, how can I be the best player I can be? And that was very short term. So I wish at the time there was a little part of me that said, oh, I think I want to stay in the game.
Tiffany first represented the United States national women's team aged just 16. She spent a decade playing for her country, earning 110 caps along the way. During that time, Tiffany took part in three World Cups, including the unforgettable 1999 championship, which was both hosted and won by the USA. She also won a gold medal in the 1996 Olympics. Since retiring from the national team, Tiffany has served as an ambassador for U.S. soccer with the U.S. Department of State Sports Envoy Program, promoting the power and benefit of sport internationally. Tiffany is currently head coach of the women's soccer team at the University of Central Florida. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the Women's World Cup of 1999. Well, I am so excited to have a U.S. legend and amazing coach and someone who I really identify with for many different reasons here. Tiff, thanks so much for joining us on the FIFA Pro Podcast.
Thank you so much. When you guys contacted me, I was like, no way. So this is an honor for me and very excited to chat with you.
Well, thank you. So, of course, you won the 1999 FIFA Women's World Cup, which was such a huge moment, of course, for you, I'm sure, but for so many of us watching. And I actually didn't realize when I was speaking to Christine Sinclair that it was also this moment for her, having been in Portland and watching. And, you know, I was in LA and saw the final. And I guess I didn't realize just the extent, you know, I figured little girls like me growing up in LA were able to go to this game. But no, I mean, as a global event for players from all over, and of course, with the tournament being spread out around the US, I think it's just for those of us, and maybe there aren't as many of us still playing who are my age and my generation, but seeing now the women who are so impacted by that tournament and who now are going on to do amazing things in the game as coaches, management, in these different roles. What was that tournament like as a player?
Oh my God. We could probably take the whole show just talking about the emotions that went along with it and the challenges. But I was so young on the team. I have to be honest. Like, I had such amazing veteran leadership on the team, like the players with Julie Foudy and Carla Overbeck and, you know, Brandi Chastain. And I mean, the list goes on, Bryce Curry. So I was just kind of like this young, like, one just kind of following along and this is awesome. But, you know, credit to the veteran leadership. I mean, I'm sure you've heard some of these stories, but the beginning of the World Cup, I mean, they wanted to have it in smaller stadiums and the team really fought to have bigger stadiums and really go for it and say, no, this is going to be huge. And so to have that, you know, foresight, like to say, no, we're going to do big things. I'm sure it's a little nerve wracking too. We're like, oh gosh, I hope we do big things, right? After we committed to it.
Yeah.
But obviously the rest is history and we did do big things, but being a player on the team, I would just have to say first, like the culture on the team with the national team and the coaches and their leadership style and the leadership style by the veterans was just something that I'll always be grateful for. And being in a head coaching position now, I think I use those experiences on a daily basis to guide me just because it was such a positive experience. But after overall, I mean, just being, you know, a young soccer player going through this, it's just like it just kept snowballing. So and just to get the attention, we weren't used to the attention. We weren't used to the crowds. I was just telling my daughters the story of how there was a lot of traffic going to our game. The first round game. And then we realized the traffic was actually for us. And we were like, our minds were blown, you know?
Oh my gosh, I have goosebumps.
Yeah. So it's just like mainstream. All of a sudden people were talking about us. And this was a lot before social media. So it was just crazy, mind blowing. But we were soaking it all in. And then obviously to win was just, I just so many emotions, you know. It's like relief, but then just like pure joy. It's like pure joy. Yeah.
So how much did the landscape of the women's game change between the 96 gold medal and this 99 world championship?
From my perspective, like I said, I was a bit young between those times. I feel like I, you know, went back to UNC and just was a college player again, you know? So
yeah.
If I was older and going through it, I think I probably would just have more to say and have more perspective. But I think, you know, looking back now, I don't think it changed dramatically. You know, I mean, I do think like 96 was like the beginning, where we got people to start thinking about it, but it wasn't really that impactful. You know, our games were not on TV. Like, I had never even seen the 96 final. Like, I had never even watched it. They just showed it on TV recently.
Oh, wow.
And so none of the games were televised. We had a quick, like, interview right after the 96 gold medal match, congratulating us. But it just, you know, it took some time. And so I think it was the 99 World Cup where there wasn't a pro league between 96 and 99 in the US.
Right.
So like I said, I went back to college and just did my college thing, you know?
Right. I think that says a lot in itself that you just went back to school and did college, won a championship there, you know, did your thing. And normal life, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But it was the 99 World Cup, obviously, that like, that was what really set the tone, I think, and really got the ball rolling.
Yeah. So speaking of the ball rolling, what was that like then, being a founding member player of the WUSA? And what were the salaries like? What were the conditions like in that league? And then what kind of happened for it to then fold?
So, you know, first of all, we were so excited. We were psyched. We were like, oh my gosh, we're going to be professional soccer players, you know, because before this time, I mean, some of my teammates would go overseas and play professionally, just a handful. I don't even know if it was a handful.
Yeah. And even then it was limited options, even around the world for women.
Totally. So it's like I said, I went back to my college team. I was training like at random parks, you know, when I wasn't with my college team. So to all of a sudden, it was good timing for me personally, because I finished my college career and then basically the 99 World Cup, and then the league was starting in 2001. So we just to know like we were going to be professionals was such a huge accomplishment. I feel like we were like, okay, we did it. We finally arrived. And to have the support that we did seemed just kind of mind-blowing too. But it was exciting. I'll tell you, I don't know if many people know this, but I was actually, so they took the 20 World Cup players and then they allocated us to, I can't even remember now, eight teams? I can't remember. But the 20 of us were allocated to the teams. We kind of got to say, okay, if you had a first choice, where would you go? What were your second choice? And so I put down, Orlando was actually one of the teams. And so I put Orlando down, I think as my second choice. I may have put the Bay Area as my first choice. That's where I'm from. But then I think I put Orlando as second because my husband, boyfriend at the time, was playing for the Miami Fusion in Major League Soccer. So I was like, oh, okay, if I can't be with my family, I'll try to be next time boyfriend. And, no joke. Like, it was about 1 month before the league was supposed to start, before preseason, they said that Orlando was no longer going to have a team and that we would have a team in North Carolina instead. So here I am thinking, oh, I'm living in Orlando. And then like 1 month, I'm like, oh my God, I'm back in Chapel Hill. And, it was so crazy. So we changed our mindset, okay, back in Chapel Hill. And it was so weird because we didn't even have a stadium. So we were playing in my college stadium the first year.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And I went back into my college like house that I, you know, my parents own a townhome there. And I was like, back in college days, living in Chapel Hill. I was like, wait, I was supposed to be a professional. What's going on right now? So the first year was a little bit hectic just for the, I would say more for Orlando and or North Carolina. We were Carolina Courage. But then, you know, the next year was great. the stadium was built in Cary. And so we finally had our own place to play, and it was a smaller stadium, and we had our own practice field and a locker room. And that's when it really felt professional. And then, as you know, it don't, we were all on 5-year contracts, like the national team, the 20 of us were on 5-year contracts.
Oh.
And so we were guaranteed like this league was going to last for 5 years. And after 3 years, I'll never forget. It was like, you know, a few weeks before the World Cup, we were in World Cup training. In 2003, we were in Virginia, just like pre-camp for World Cup. And I believe it was Foudy who told us, guys, we're going down, like the league is going to fold. And so this was what was on our mind, like in the pre-World Cup camp, weeks before the World Cup was kicking off, and we all realized we were losing our jobs. And so that was really tough, you know, news for us to kind of take. So it was sad. But it was an awesome league. We had the best players in the world. So in our league at the time.
Yeah. Well, it's so just hearing you, you talk about it, especially how it folded in the news and how good the league was. It's exactly how I felt about the WPS. And, you know, being from the U.S. myself and being so tied in with women's soccer in the U.S., even though, you know, I play for New Zealand, I think we look at the U.S. national team and the success, and now with the NWSL, and you start thinking the progress has been linear, but it has in no way been linear with the 3 year of WUSA, the 3 years of the WPS. And then, you know, even what's happened this year in the NWSL, we are far from having a stable, safe, perfect, you know, setup for players around this country. So what were your thoughts when you, with the WPS and now with the NWSL, I mean, how are you able to have kind of faith in the system again and in U.S. soccer and I guess also kind of the public and the sponsors' investment in women's soccer now in this country?
So I'm someone who's positive. My outlook is always positive. So I think the best, and you know, sometimes my heart gets broken because I'm going to trust it. And, but that's, I just feel like I could bring good vibes. So why not just, you know, go with it? So I do have faith. I do have faith, and just, it's come so far. You know, the fact that we're expanding in the NWSL, that's amazing. It's lasted. What year is this? Is this going on the 9th or 10th year maybe?
Yeah, I think it's the 9th year now.
Yeah,
I get confused because of last year not really being a year.
Totally. So it's like the fact that we're expanding, the fact that it's lasted this long. And if you look back at Major League Soccer, like it was rough for the first however many years too,
yeah,
you know, and just
definitely.
Think about how, so we're like at the beginning stages of where Major League Soccer was and to see where Major League Soccer has gone, like, I know that we could do the same thing, and we have a great product out there. I mean, just look at the amazing players that play in our league. It is attractive, football. So, you know, it's been a little bit, like you said, nothing about it is linear, and you're going to have your bumps and your challenges, but I think that's all going to be part of our growth. And, but I do have faith, and, I think continuing to invest in women's soccer, I mean, it's going to be worth it for those that are investing in it. And I mean, I think I read an article yesterday just about the Washington Spirit, and there might be like a bidding war for the ownership group. So that is something that's super special. You know, that's to see that there's people with a lot of money willing to put themselves out there and take on a team. And now there's people fighting for the team. I'm like, okay, this is good. This is good news.
Right.
And so I do have a lot of faith because of that.
So when you decided to start coaching, and I loved, I was reading something that you wrote for Our Game magazine, and you lead by serving others, and you can just tell how passionate you are about coaching, about mentoring, you know, equally, if not more passionate than you were with playing, which I think for players like myself who are nearing the ends of our careers, hopefully not for another while, what advice would you give to players in order to have, whether it's an open mind or just be ready and willing to kind of find that passion after our playing careers, and also be prepared for when our playing careers end.
Yeah. So, I mean, I tell this to my players, current players at UCF all the time. I'm like, you might not know what you want to do, but like, keep everything. Like, yeah, you know, like I wish at UNC or even, like, especially on the national team, like I just never thought I would be a coach. So I was just so like narrow minded. And my focus was just like, how can I be the best player I can be? And that was very short term. So I wish at the time there was a little part of me that said, oh, I think I want to stay in the game after my playing career. I literally didn't know how it, I thought maybe I'd go into like commentating or something. I actually tried it and like did not enjoy it at all. But so I was like, oh, I need to change paths here. But I would give, yeah, be open-minded like you said. And like, I wish I kept like all of the information that was given to me by my coaches. I wish I took better notes. I wish I took it more seriously just in case, you know, because I think I was naive also when I was younger to think like, I'd never felt like I'm this soccer head, you know? So I'm like, well, I can't see myself being a head coach if I'm not like this soccer head that's just like knows all these facts. And I'm just, I've never been like that. But like you said, I have a passion for mentoring and I have a passion for coaching, and I love inspiring and having young people like create goals and like getting after them and feeling a part of that is really special. So I guess I didn't put two and two together. I just thought it was like X's and O's and you're a head coach and you've got to be like some crazy soccer nerd to be a head coach. And I didn't see that being me. And then my next thing would be, so keep everything, like I said, and be open-minded. But I would say that the other thing is that your path isn't really, most times it's not exactly what you think it's going to be. Like I hadn't, like I said, I didn't know I was going to be a coach. And then I was given an opportunity and I just said, okay, I think I feel totally unprepared. So a lot of times we want to feel prepared, and obviously that gives us confidence. But if you're not expecting something, which means you're unprepared, like I just went for it anyway. Like I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be any good at this or should I just try it? And I'm talking like college level, like Tim and I, my husband, we were given a head coaching job just right out of the gates, like take over Virginia Commonwealth University. And it was such a blessing. And I was like, what? Like, we're not even qualified. I mean, obviously we know X's and O's, but like the other parts of the job, I had no idea what I was getting into, but who cares? You know, like just try it. And then you either don't do it again, change paths. And now we've been doing it collegially for 15 years. And it wasn't like I wanted to be a GA somewhere, or I didn't even have my coaching license. Like I hadn't even had a coaching license yet. So, and then I was brought into the national team youth camps with April Heinrichs, and then getting a taste of like coaching at the national team level, the youth national team level, and just putting like US gear back on. I was like, oh, this is so cool. So I actually really love that combination of coaching collegiately and then also having opportunity to travel overseas again and just being part of US soccer coaching the youth. And that like really filled my cup as well.
So I know that you also have been involved in a program traveling the world and talking about the benefits of sport for girls and women. How important do you think it is for girls to have access to sport? What does it give them? And what do brands and federations need to do to make sure that we're not letting girls drop out of sport or not have access to it?
Well, the first thing, I don't know if I'm answering your question like directly, but while you were talking, I was formulating something. So I was like, oh, like, I think the first thing, Allie, and I, like, you're doing this for my daughters. I was telling you pre-show, like, you're such a big role model to my daughters. But to see people that look like you that are doing something that you love is so inspiring, you know? And so first of all, like women, so my daughters, you know, making sure that they go see the Orlando Pride and be right there up and close and see these women perform at the highest level and seeing players look like them out on the field is so important. So I think one of the first things is like having access to be able to watch and be able to meet their role models and see them live. And like I said, not just seeing women, but women of color and diversity. Yeah. And it's so important just to have that thought like, oh, they do that, I can do that too.
Yeah.
Or I want to be that when I grow up. It just gives you something to look forward to and something to aspire to be. So to have women there, we have to have them out there. And just like we're talking about the NWSL, like having our games, you know, accessible, not just live, but on TV, being part of mainstream, being sponsored. So we're seeing, you know, all of the women professional players in commercials, whatever it is, just out there for girls to see that you could do this for a living, you know? And so, but as far as access goes, I mean, I do think it's just, you know, giving them the opportunity. I think it's really difficult in the US how expensive it is to have your kids play soccer. I mean,
yeah,
my kids play club soccer and I'm like, what? This is ridiculous how much money we have to pay. And so hopefully we can come up with a better business plan so that our kids and more diversity can be included in the participation.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But, you know, I think for girls, it's like we aspire to do big things and to have those role models, I think is huge, but we have to give them opportunity. But there are a lot of distractions out there, I think, for all youth, not just the girls, but the boys too. So
yeah,
somehow we got to keep our kids focused in sport. Because obviously, you know, it's like the sport kept me straight, you know, and it kept me from, you know, whether getting in trouble or going, you know, a different route that wasn't really helpful. So I love that it gave me confidence. You know, if I didn't have soccer, I don't know if I would have the ability to feel good about myself. Or, I mean, it really helped me with confidence, speaking to people, obviously the teamwork. I mean, you know all this stuff already, but it's just, it's given me my whole life. So I'm obviously a huge advocate for kids getting into sport and then girls too, because all the life lessons it teaches us growing up.
What do you see with your daughters now? These are the stories that I love because it does show how far we've come compared to when you were a little girl. And I know you're playing sport with your brothers and doing everything, but obviously the access and what you're able to see on TV and maybe the role models you would have had compared to your daughters, how different it is for them. Like, are they just, is the sky the limit? Do they really believe that they can do everything? Cause I hope so.
Yeah, no, for sure. Allie, like, you know, having an NWSL team in our backyard is the most amazing thing for me as a mom. You know, we talk about the pride on a daily basis, you know? So I do think that they feel like the sky is the limit. And I also think it's because they have a parents that are like constantly pushing them to say, hey, no, don't say that. Like, be positive. No, you can do that. Don't say you can't. I mean, it's natural for kids to not always have a ton of confidence. Mm-hmm. I think girls especially.
Yeah.
But I think they're just surrounded by amazing women athletes here. So I feel really lucky because they see their mom in a leadership position.
Yeah.
I think, which is nice for them to see that. And like their mom and dad working together, and technically like I'm the head coach and I'm female. So they see that you could be in charge and being a female, and then they see the pros in our backyard.
Yes.
But then they're surrounded by our college student athletes,
right,
all the time. And they see them, how focused they are in academics. It's like they're in the best like world to like,
yeah,
teach them that sky's the limit, and that they just have great role models, you know? And like you said, I did not have that growing up. I had my, you know, competing against my brothers. But I will tell you that what actually sparked like my fire with getting into sport or taking sport seriously was the Olympics. So I watched the Olympics in 1984, I was in second grade and I saw Mary Lou Retton win a gold medal in gymnastics, and I saw Jackie Joyner-Kersee in track,
yeah,
win a gold medal. There was no soccer. So, I was like, that's amazing. That's what I want to do. So at second grade, I saw these women compete in the Olympics, and I told everyone that's what I was going to do. And I was like, I'm doing it. Like every year I talk about it. So it started with seeing the role models. That's why I feel so passionate about speaking on that, because it was actually pretty personal for me.
And with being just 16 when you were called into the national team and being surrounded by your role models and those superstars, what was that like? Were you just going forth with young, confident recklessness? And second part of the question, what advice do you wish someone had given you at that stage in your career?
Being called up to the national team at such a young age, I would say it was two parts. I would say the youthful fearlessness happened once the whistle blew or you were in between the lines or practice started, because you're just thinking yourself as, I just do what I do. You know, I run around and I compete and be the best person player I can be. But I would say off the pitch, I was like, what am I doing here? I'm surrounded by my role models. I mean, I literally had a picture of Mia Hamm in my high school binder, you know, as just, you know, motivation every day while I'm in high school. Open up my binder, I see Mia Hamm. That's what I want to be like when I grow up. And now, you know, a week later, I'm in training camp with her. So I really had this feeling of, why am I here? I don't belong. These women are amazing. I'm this just little 16-year-old that just runs around like with the, you know, chicken with her head cut off. So, but really once we started competing, I felt like more of myself. And it just kind of blossomed. And so that's how that worked out. Advice. I wish someone gave me the advice. Actually, maybe I was given the advice, but I think as a young player, it's hard to believe it. Is just, you know, be who you are. Like just, you know, enjoy yourself while you're there. Don't feel all the pressure. I mean, it's like people are telling you this, but I really wish I was able to believe all that and do it so, I don't know, gracefully. I think everyone who's played at the national team level, like it's so hard. Like you're constantly wondering if you belong, or at least this is what I went through. And like, am I good enough? And the confidence, to keep up your confidence is difficult when you're surrounded by the best players in the world. So, you know, I guess I did get that advice, but my advice, I guess, is to others is just like, actually believe it, you know, believe it.
Well, after the 99 World Cup and now seeing where you are with still being involved in the women's game, even though it's the college game, how have you seen now with social media, with the investment, with now the NWSL being on its 9th or 10th, depending on how you gauge the 2020 season? What is that like seeing first as a player, now as a coach? The growth, the investment, the excitement around the game from which was such a pinnacle event, 99, but really was still such a long way off from where we are now. Is it just so exciting to see the brands that are getting involved, the cities that are getting involved? What's that like for you having been involved this whole time since that pinnacle event?
I mean, I feel proud. I feel grateful. And like I said, I have faith. I think that we still have a long way to go, but just to see that, you know, women are making a living doing this. And like I said, we have some ways to go, but it's so fun. It's so fun to be able to like, whoa, we've come such a long way in the investment. Like you said, that we're giving to the women. And, you know, something kind of that goes along with this too is think about all the leagues in the world, you know, like how much more we're investing in women across the board and how much more parity there is across the board around the world. Like, you know, being an American soccer player, obviously I'm like, no, we got to stay on top. We got to stay on top. But honestly, no, like I don't want that. I mean, obviously I want to win, but I want to see the rest of the world winning and competing and having amazing leagues and watching attractive football and seeing investors be supportive and all in. And so it just, yeah, from my perspective and kind of gone through what we've gone through and now seeing, it's very exciting.
What's something that still frustrates you or something that you really think could help the women's game get even better that we're still maybe not quite getting, whether it's on the investment side or the media side?
Well, first, yeah, just the access to being able to watch games a lot easier. I actually had this she might have been in elementary school. She did this whole research project on women in sport and the media coverage that they receive and how terrible it is. She actually opened my eyes to this. So she did a little interview. And I'm like, can you send me a report? Because that is some amazing research that you've done. But you turn on the TV. We don't see women when you turn on the TV.
Right.
right away, right? We got to go find out what time this game's on, and we're doing all this extra work to figure this out, right? So it needs to be more mainstream. We need to have that access, and we need to see women on TV way more often. Like I said, that, you know how I feel about having role models for our young girls. So,
right. We need to normalize it.
Exactly. It shouldn't be, oh, wow, they're playing the final, you know, I mean, even watching the College Cup, I mean, it's so difficult to get access just to college games too.
Mm-hmm.
And what a awesome role models all the student athletes can be for young girls to say, oh, I can go get my degree and play at a really high level. That's pretty cool. And be able to watch that on a daily basis. Like, why not? So yeah, that is very frustrating to me for sure. And so that's definitely an area where we need to improve dramatically. But I don't know if this is tangent because it doesn't have to do with media, but I would say when you were bringing up things where we need to go, it's just women in coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes. It's like we need to get more women involved. That's why I'm giving you a pump up. I mean, I know you're not ready yet, Allie, but you let me know when you're, you know, 20 years from now, Allie, when you're ready to get into coaching.
Right. Okay.
We need women.
Well, how do we do that? How do we get more women coaching and refereeing and being GMs and commissioners and president? I mean, what do we do? Or, I mean, maybe not us, but what needs to be done? How does someone encourage that from a financial standpoint, or what needs to be done?
I mean, I think that there are probably a lot of things that need to be done. I don't think it's like one easy answer. I think one part is like the education, you know, getting access. And I mm-hmm. think that we've started a little bit of this is like getting access to like current professionals to start their licensing. Because I mean, like I said, I started coaching and I didn't get my license until like 6 years later or something crazy like that, just because I had no time and I was a mom. So like having this access to current pros and being flexible with how they can get that education, because sometimes it's like black and white and you can't fit your life mm-hmm. into this coaching course. And like I said, I had to take, you know, I know the process is a lot different. So it seemed like a lot when I did, it was like a 10-day course and I had to leave my family, two kids, and my husband, you know, by himself with the kids. I mean, it was hard. It was hard on our family. And so to not make it as difficult and just to somehow continue to incorporate with our current players, pros, I think will help. And then, you know, I think salaries too. I mean, women could go on and make big time salaries doing other things. So right. we have to be able to prove that, say, being a professional soccer coach in the NWSL is stable and lucrative.
Because
mm-hmm. it's like, well, why would a current player want to get into coaching if there's no stability and there's not a lot of money involved?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why would I go that direction?
Yeah.
So we have to invest in to get more women coaching. I think we got to, I mean, women are smart, you know, they want to make a living and they want to be stable and they want to be able to have families. So to be able to have that opportunity, I think, is important. And then we have to, the people that are hiring have to be more intentional about finding women candidates. Because I think the candidates are there. They just, the people in charge of hiring need to do an extensive job and search to make sure they find the right female candidate. And it's happening, right? I mean, we've noticed a few more women being hired with Amanda Cromwell with the Pride, right, recently. And so I know more women are beginning, you know, but you know, what's annoying a little bit is that it took, you know, scandals for all of a sudden,
right,
for us to be like, oh, wait, maybe we should have women. And it's, you know, it's risky having a man in charge now. I'm like, wait, what? No, we've been here the whole time. You know?
Yeah. No, it is encouraging to see. I think, again, it's, you didn't want players to have these horrible things happen to suddenly themselves be like, oh gosh, maybe I should be coaching if, you know, there are these terrible coaches out there. But at the same time, you know, some of my good friends and teammates have just been on their coaching course. Tony Presley and Allie Krieger just did that. And Jody Taylor was just finishing up right now in England with her A license. So there's some great coaches soon around the corner to be had out there. And I think too, it would be really interesting or beneficial when players are kind of the end of their careers. And Anya Mittag is the first example I can think of in Germany. You know, she was still, she could have kept playing, of course, but she went to Red Bull Leipzig and she was playing a little bit, but also coaching. And then she was able to make the transition very smoothly. And I think that is because we don't know when we're going to be ready to retire. And sometimes, you know, it can be abrupt, like an injury or, you know, but sometimes maybe you just aren't enjoying it as much or you're not getting as much playing time. There's younger talent out there. And to be in a safe environment with leadership around you, management around you that you're familiar with, to embark on something new that, like you were saying, we're familiar with some aspects of the game, but not necessarily what it would take to be a GM or even a physio or a coach. So I think if clubs can be open now to having their players stay involved and have contracts as players, but with that kind of idea of then if there is something, we want to keep you in the club. That's, these investments have to be more long-term. And that's one thing that I hope the NWSL will improve now too, where you're not trading players willy-nilly when they don't even get a say in it, that actually you invest in a player and what they're going to give you after they've stopped playing. I think that would help a lot. And you see it in the college game where you can have a volunteer assistant or a grad, you know, who's in grad school, because it gives you a little bit of a safety net. But of course, I would think, you know, you would love to have your former players still involved. I know it's different with college. People go on to have different jobs or play. But yeah, I think that could be really helpful.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you see it happen on the men's side. You know, you see former players in Major Exactly. League Soccer, you know, they continue to invest in their players and now they're the head coaches of the Major League Soccer team. Or like you said, or they move out of coaching and they still have, you know, an office, you know, in the front office or management or marketing, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really good point. And I just think your generation, you guys have so much in front of you. And I think you guys right now have this opportunity where you can really, you know, voice concerns and voice what you want. You mm-hmm. know, I just feel like, you know, back in the day, not that we actually were kind of pioneers in voicing what we want, I think back then, you know, but I think even now, you know, Kate Markgraf being the GM for the U.S. women's national team and Cindy Parlow's the president of U.S. soccer. I mean, these are like big time. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, my friend's the president of U.S. soccer. Like, I'm like, what? This is so cool. So we've actually come a long way, but I think you're definitely in a position where we're like learning from history. And I think, I mean, you've said it and we're talking about it, but for players to start thinking about it, I was so naive. I never thought about it until all of a sudden, boom, done. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I think you guys are, your generation's a lot smarter to think about, you know, your careers after playing and how you want to get involved. There's so many different avenues you can go to, not just coaching, obviously, you've said them. So you guys are a lot smarter about that. So hopefully we will see this, you know, uptick in having women in bigger roles.
I hope so. And speaking of the future, obviously this is in celebration of the 30th anniversary of the FIFA Women's World Cup. And we are very close to our next one in 2023. From what you've seen from, you know, all the way 91, playing 99, now seeing what happened in 2019 with a spectacular World Cup and the engagement, the numbers were through the roof. What do you think the legacy of the 2023 Women's World Cup, hosted by, of course, New Zealand and Australia, will be?
Well, the legacy is going to be that it's going to be the best World Cup that was ever hosted in the history of Women's World Cup. So,
oh yeah,
you know, it's just going to keep getting better. Obviously, the host countries are desirable places where people are going to flock to. I was already looking at the dates. I'm like, wait, my preseason, like start, like how am I going to get this done when it's
bring
like
the team, you bring like, the team.
I'm going to get donors started working on this right now. The legacy will be that it's going to be the best, Women's World Cup we've ever had. It only gets better. The competition's going to be better. It's going to be more difficult, but the coverage, Allie, we're saying it right now. The coverage is going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing. Think
about the coverage, though, in the last World Cup. I thought the coverage was amazing in the last World Cup. So, you know, it's going to be the best ever. And we'll either, hopefully we could be there in person as my family. But if not, we'll be right in front of the TV. Yeah, but it's going to be great.
Well, on that note, thank you so much. Very excited for you and your family to be at that World Cup. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
That's all for this episode of the FIFA Pro podcast, Changing the Game. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do like, subscribe, and review it, or maybe share it with a friend. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.